Two Pints in a Corner is a music history podcast about the Channel Club in Boston, Mass. Dinky Dawson and Tony Rain are your hosts. They interview channel performers and workers, bringing out stories and memories of the great music and events that came through this iconic South Boston venue. Well, let's do it then. And this is Mike Gerard 2.
It's this guy must be popular to have a two-part interview.
Two-part.
All the unanswered questions from part one.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's do this. Two Pints in the Corner welcomes Mike Gerard from Fools and many other big band stuff and many books. He's got some new ones, too. And here he is. Welcome to Mike Gerard Tutu.
Hey, Dinky, how are you, man?
I'm doing quite well today. I'm a lot better than I usually am. And, it's texting with having this, testy with having all this dialysis. But I have a wonderful nurse and a wonderful person that looks after my butt. And I can't grumble because I'm here still. And that's the bottom line when it comes down to it. Peter's got a bad back. He had a little bit of an accident in a bar. We always said that. Are you there?
I am.
Oh, you're there, yeah. Okay. Thanks. We're off and running then. Okay. So, Mike, I know that you said a lot of good stuff on the other one. We got good comments from people that really listened to it. You weren't the surfer. That was the wrong mic. That was a friend of Peter Limbaugh.
That was my fault.
we got to ask him about the surf. But I want to ask him about all the adventures and stuff that you've been doing, especially coming out of the channel, all the 80s stuff that you were doing all of, and any other good stories that you have, because I know you have a lot of them.
Well, thanks. It's what I can't quite remember, I probably just make up after a while. But
nothing wrong with that.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, many times.
But it's the gist of it that's the true thing. So, I was thinking we've all been in bad bands. I say some people know. Some people start out, they seem fully formed from the first thing. Wow, how'd these guys just start and be so good? But in any event, you play in a lot of crappy bands, and I remember – I was in a band with Rich Bartlett, my guitar player, and three guys, Steve Cataldo, Jeff Wilkinson, and Rob Skeen, that would become the Nervous Eaters.
We just talked about that.
We were just talking about the Eaters.
This was before the Fools and before the Nervous Eaters. We were in a band together. And we played, some Velvet Underground. We played some Muddy Waters. It was a real weird mix. We were too proud to play the hits of the day. So we kind of dug in a little deeper on some of the stuff that we liked, and, we would do, instead of doing You Really Got Me by the Kinks, we would do something from Soap Opera, their album, or, you know what I mean?
I like it.
We're trying to, if we couldn't write original songs, which is trying to be a little more original in what we picked. Yeah. But that band, I could see Steve started writing some tunes, and I could see that, he was probably going to be singing them himself. So at that point, I left that band, and I went to California for a year or so. And I had the worst job I've ever had in my life. I was working in a leather factory, dying.
Oh, no. And
I worked 5'11", 150 pounds. And I'm working with a great bunch of guys, these Hispanic guys, big guys, though, and I didn't speak Spanish and they didn't speak much English, but, we still had a great time. But they used to call me Miguelito. That's a little Mike. And we'd have to pull hides out of these enormous drums. This will eventually lead to music, I promise you. We had to pull hides out of the performance drums, and you put them in the drums, and they weigh between 15 and 25, 30 pounds. They come out soaked, and they weigh up to 50 pounds. And you got to take 1,100 out of this drum. Now, these guys, wasn't 1,100. It was probably more like 500. But these guys, you could leave as soon as you did it and still get paid for 8 hours. So these guys, a lot of these guys are doing 5.5, 6 hours. Me, I would come out after about 10 hours. My knees were they'd be in the parking lot having, beer and fried chicken. And so, they'd call me over, and some of them would reenact some of my falls. I'm hanging out with these guys, and they have they're listening to salsa music, and they're flipping the channel around, and they get onto KSAN, which is like San Francisco's WBCN.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he goes, "Oh, this great local band, The Tubes," and they played the cassette version of White Punks on Dope. It was before they actually had their album deal, but it blew me away just hearing it. And like 2 days later, ended up with a friend, and I think we went to, I don't know, the factory or whatever the hell the name of one of the places, or the boarding house maybe, and we saw the full show, and it just totally blew me away. It really changed me the same way that seeing Jake Isles for the first time, I thought, Jesus, maybe I should just quit. These guys are so good. You know? And then when I saw The Tubes, I said, doesn't have to be totally serious. So after that, I came back and, with the help of Stacy and Richie, we started The Fool. So, but we, having seen that rock and roll could have a little bit of theater to it.
Yeah.
Now they were the people who haven't seen them or don't know about them. They're just this incredible, and they still play. They're the incredible group of guys that play music really, really well. But their songs he takes on characters in the songs that he does in full battle array too. So we were like the cheap version of that. Not that, you know what I mean? Yes. Yes, they had a bigger production budget, obviously, than we did. But no, when I saw them, I just thought, wow, I got to do something that's fun.
I like that. When you see that, you get inspired. I love it.
Yeah, and it was great to places like the Channel in particular, with a nice big stage.
And yeah,
great
that's sound. It. That's it. That's the key, the big stage stuff. It wasn't a small club like The Rat where you were all crowded and trying to get your own space. And you didn't care at the Channel. You just got everybody else's space because it was so big.
And I understand how how seminal the Rat was to the music scene, but I hated playing there.
Yeah.
Like, on stage, for a while, the toilet was literally a hole in the floor.
Yeah, I remember that. But so was the Channel. Was pretty bad bathrooms. But
I did my best to stay out of the Rat bathroom.
The Channel just had great sound, and it had the room. We could take chances there.
Yeah,
That's a great term.
That really is, yeah. I like that one. You could take chances.
We had twin roadies. I don't know if you remember Tom Termini and his brother. The Termini, they were roadies everywhere for everyone for years. But they were starting out as roadies and worked for us. And because they were twins, I started getting them to dress alike. And this was a thing we do at the Channel. We have them push out this box on this. We have one of them inside. Because they were small guys, one of them inside a chest on wheels, and would push the chest out into the middle of the stage and slowly walk off stage. And then I would say abracadabra and open the chest, and it would look like the guy who would put. People, is there a hole in the floor? There must be a hole in the floor. And at that point, I'd say, "Now get this chest out of here," and the other the twin would come out and they'd both push the chest off. See, people were able to see how it happened, you know.
I love it. And those are the things that's great and fun and simple. And they add to a show rather than just straight music. It's just it's entertaining on many levels and stuff, you know.
Oh, you know, it's funny you use the word show, Dinky, and you think about, you know, some of the great bands that came out of Boston, and they did have a show.
Oh, totally.
You know, they had a something about them. Even the Cars, who didn't move with White Light, that was its own show, you know?
Yeah.
I saw so many bands, especially at the Channel, when you go in there, and in my case, looking for talent, and you see these young kids or these even older guys who go out of their way to try to be rock stars. But to the real musician and the real band that actually gels together, it's natural.
It's real natural. And that's the thing about having no bands and stuff. When you must have got that when you started to get into the Fool's Heavy with the band. Once the band, it's like, let's do this, lads, let's do that, lads, and what have you. It's like having this 17-year-old, 16-year-old, or whatever Danny was with us with Fleetwood Mac. What's this little kid coming in here? Where did he come from? And Peter befriended him after he saw the Boyle House people play. And the next thing you know, we've got a star on our hands because he could actually play not only the guitar, he could actually have fun writing these fun songs, you know, and stuff, and being part of a education along the way. And then they did Albatross together with a duo. It made everybody freak out. Because it was so done so well, you know, and the spirit was just wonderful. And I noticed that with what you guys have done with certain songs, like, you know, the songs that made the Fools popular, but certainly songs that made other people popular. That's why you're doing all these songs now with the big band, that really ones that you loved, you guys, you know. And the big band is taking you to another extreme in music now, which is excellent. And at this age, it's wonderful, let me tell you. So continue with the big band, no matter, as well as the Foolies. And the Fools are fun. But the big band has got more, I can sit down and listen to this one.
It's powerful.
Yeah, with all that, when you were talking about them trombones, I kept looking at Peter across the thingy going, he's got four trombones. The man's mad, but it's great. It's great.
Well, you've also caused a ruckus in my house because now my wife is insisting that we get a night out and go see the big band. So, you know.
You gotta do that.
I didn't need much pushing, but, you know, as soon as I came home from the last time we interviewed you, that was the talk of the evening.
You know, the big band is, it's really done for love because, you know, it tried to pay 20 people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely.
We get paid well when we play the places we play, but still, you know, it's what I say is, to keep that many people together, you can buy people's time, but you can't buy their heart.
No,
you know what I mean?
Not at all.
And, now it's become like just a big family. It's really it's a real good time, and we kind of try to do it democratically. But the only people who rule what they sing are the people who sing those songs. I don't want to do this one. I want to do that one. Great. You know, because you have to, there's three other singers in the band beside me that sing lead. I do most of the tunes, but they each do two songs through the night and sing on backup on everything else, each other's as well. So that's the only, you know, you let people sing what they want. We're doing tunes that I always wanted to do, but I mean, there weren't any horns in the band or there weren't.
Yeah.
Female backup singers.
That's the other thing. Yeah,
but, and both Allie and Denise, Allie Connolly and Denise, they they can really nail the tunes, and they really sell them, and they both really they both have that magic about them on stage. And I stand on the side of the stage, and I'm as blown away as the people in the audience when they do this stuff. So yeah, it's fun. I mean, if music stops being fun and becomes a job,
time to get out.
Time to get out. Once it becomes a job, you've got to keep going and going and going.
My first interview with Ted Truskowski from The Globe, that's exactly the thing I said to him. I said, I'm in this. I'm having fun. If I stop having fun, I'll go do something else.
Yeah. And that's why the big band has taken on an element of real creative stuff, because it sounds as from the past, but at the same time, given the flair from past in certain aspects, but in other ways, it's your own new stuff, and everybody's enjoying playing that stuff. And I think it's wonderful that you're doing it, to be honest with you. It gives you a whole different perspective on where music's at with all those people singing too. I love that stuff. You know,
it's funny, but we all know people who've been pigeonholed into a certain
thing. Exactly.
I mean, and it's not just musicians, actors, and So for you to be able to come up with something new and step outside of yourself.
I love it.
But still have it be you.
Yeah.
Just a different piece of you. I find amazing, and I find so freaking creative.
Yeah.
And I'm so impressed with it.
Yep.
Well, thanks.
That's why we're on mic too, because we're more than impressed with what you're up to these days as well. And to think it all came out of the 80s channel and Boston stuff, you know.
I mean, can you imagine his big band on the channel stage?
Oh, man.
I mean, can you?
Big band would fit that stage perfectly.
Yeah, and that's what Charlie Watts did so well on that stage. Yeah. He loved it because it was a big stage he could get out. It wasn't just a club. It was a big club and stuff, you know.
But it still had a club feel in a good way. I mean,
it did.
In Boston Garden, hanging over somebody's back or up in a balcony, or, you know, you were in a very big crowd of people, relative speaking, but people that were all free to move around. So, it was a special place, man.
And you know, you could see and hear from every place. I mean, I just remember, you know, talking to Mike, the bar manager. I'd be standing at the bar with a drink, and you know, it was just like it was a night. You know, I didn't have to struggle to move, to do anything. The sight lines were great. Yeah, the sound was great.
Production was always fun. And some days was better than others, depending on who was in there to perform. But it was still worth it, no matter even if it was a dull night and stuff. When people came from New Hampshire, dressed up the ones that get dressed up with the big mask on there and all that. They got dressed up in their thing. There was six people in the audience. And they played their show to the max, because it's a big venue. It was the best thing they could do, and enjoyed themselves. And they enjoyed themselves, and then they threw out a whole bunch of flyers that they had to pick up afterwards because nobody picked them up.
But you're right, though. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you're playing to, 30,000 people or 1,000 people, or 100 people, you're still trying to get that feeling going.
Exactly.
Of fun and the connection with the audience. That's been the therapy of it all these years for us. I mean, it just has it frees you, but it also lets you, exorcise some demons.
Exorcise. I like that one. Yeah.
Mike, you mean you have demons?
No, mine.
How could anybody in the music business have demons?
You don't have demons with a big band like that. you just turn around and listen to the horns. Oh, my God.
They're all self-created like everybody's.
Yeah.
You know, I, I, um, I feel very fortunate to have made so many good friends. And, you know, it's still a pleasure to play. So
that's a good thing. That's a real good thing. You feel your heart and stuff. We're talking about people that's already, you know, after all these years, they're coming back and still wanting to have a play. Like Graham Nash is playing down here. I'm like, he's doing a solo tour, but he's telling the stories. He's doing what Denny Doherty did with Mamas and Papas before he passed.
I actually saw Peter Asher do that.
Yeah, Peter would do it too.
He had stories not only about Peter and Gordon.
No.
And he always, talked about working at Apple Records and being
Beatles.
Being the A&R guy. And
yeah.
I had more fun at that show listening to his stories than I did hearing him sing. And what he did was he had a video of Gordon. Yeah. He was, and they would still sing and harharmonize together. It was a pretty neat thing.
That's great.
That's the kind of stuff that people would like, and that's why they really come in and being entertained by the big band and stuff. And then when they come for the fools, they just let their hair down and get drunk a lot. that's what I remember.
It's fun that that we get to really, in the big band, we get to really jump all over the musical world. I mean, you know, Jim, the drummer, does a great Jackie Wilson. Remember the song Workout?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jim does that. And many people like it. Wilson. So, you know, that's a tribute to him. Denise. Old finger, you know.
Oh, and my, I love it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. Tony would love this. He would, as soon as he mentioned that kind of stuff, Tony would be there in a minute. You just got to get him out of the door to get that together and stuff, you know.
The other singer, Allie, she can do Highway Star. And man, it is just, that usually brings the house down.
Oh, aye, that will do. That would definitely do that. Wonderful.
She can hit all the notes. I don't know that the singer could still hit all the notes of the original band because some of that's pretty.
Well, when you get a bit older and you're doing that big band and stuff, you start arranging things in certain keys or certain ways of doing it to accommodate your voice change and what have you. And and like Sinatra's people used to do a real good job with him with that and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Tony Bennett, I mean, you can't, all those characters are just the way that they sang, they were singing so well that, you know, they changed as they went older, but they really didn't. If you listen to them, the phrasing's there, the whole thing about it and stuff, you know. But with doing the big band and having a little break because you're not doing all the songs yourself, you have all the people, the different people singing, it makes it real entertaining because you're getting certain people coming to the front and go, oh, my goodness, that's a wonderful rendition of that particular song. And people will go home with that in their mind. I got to go see that one again. And then the next night they might see a song or hear a song from you wow, what a way of doing that one, you know, that kind of thing. And that's where I like that kind of stuff because you can talk about the bands and stuff after some of the bands you couldn't talk about today because it's like a big drone and all of a sudden you're out the door. Well, today you remember every note with that kind of stuff, what you're doing, you know. And the entertaining of the fools, which is a different genre, different thing, it's there. It's good. It's fun. It's like Sal and his crowd, you know, when he's doing his Stompers thing and what have you. Yeah. And he just reverts back to that. But when he goes back to the to Tom Hambridge stuff, what they're doing, it's a whole different mentality. So you're playing Sal's different great. Feel, you know.
Yeah, Sal's a great performer. And I just, you know, we've become good friends over the years. And I want to say Tom Hambridge for a while played in The Fools when Leo.
Oh, my. That's
wow, that's news.
That's news. I did not know. Because Tom, I've always seen Tom Hambridge and his band play at the Channel as, you know, as a regular band and stuff here and there that came through. But I didn't realize he was getting into what he was getting into. And I was like, I beat him 1 year, though, when I got the number one blues album and he got the number two. but that was with Fleetwood Mac Shrine 69. But ever since then, he's outdone me every week because he's got so many productions that he's done down in Nashville of the blues, of different people. Yep. And really, Sean, there's a bunch of people that went down to Nashville from the Channel days. The engineer, Scott Perlman, is down there doing different major acts down there. You know, Robert Ellisoro went down and did this, that, and the other with people. That's in different areas. He's done real well, too, you know. And I think it's great because I see on your side, not only are you doing well musically, you're doing well on the written side. Because you're writing these books, they're actually a fun, and they're not foolish, they're funnish. You know, it's that's a little different flavor, because it's stories that wannabes. In other words, well, he was in my mind, and I decided I'd write that one, and it's good because it goes to another thing. You should talk with this guy, Flash Phelps, on the Radio 60s DJ on the satellite radio. He loved that kind of stuff. Yeah,
my wife listens to him.
I do in the morning.
He does too.
And he did a call out the other day for me when I was in the dialysis chair. He said, I wanted to call Dinky Dawson in the dialysis chair, the rock and roll man, you know, and stuff. So I started laughing. I said, oh, this is good stuff. Then I talked to him about Nancy and this day and that day, and he's like, oh, my God, I got to tell these stories. I'm going to write him from my book about the Who stories and traveling. It's fun to hear good stuff on the radio again, you know, in that way. It's good stuff because they play good music. They play good music. And you are doing the same thing on a physical level by playing good music when you're going out, and your heart's with it, with the big band, which is very important because each one of you is giving some emotional stuff back. Like you said, the money's not the key here. It's the camaraderie and love of each of them songs and how you perform them together and stuff like that. And that's the beauty of having a set of musicians and friends to play. And it's not just a band, you know, where it can be contagious and in many levels, whereas that kind of stuff that you're doing is just the people walk out. I'm sure every night they walk out, there's someone in there that's going to go, whoa, that was outrageous, and I've got to go back again. And the next thing you know, you've got a mailing list as long as your arm.
Going well. You know, that you mentioned a guy. What did you say his name was? Flash something.
Flash Phelps.
Flash Phelps on the radio in 60s radio, and he's from six till noon every day on the 60s channel on the satellite.
Okay, let me check that up. Yeah, you know it's when you have we had bands that had a lot of drama early on in the band. All of us fools came from different areas, and each one of us has a story about, I just couldn't play with that guy anymore, or, you know, we couldn't get a guy to come to rehearsal, or, you know, so we all had enough drama by the time became a band, and the big band as well. If, you know, talking to people, if they don't seem like they're in it heart and soul, well, we think we're going to get somebody else, you know.
Yeah, and that makes sense. That's the truth of getting a set of people together to create together, and as one, and have fun at the same time, and go home every night going, oh my goodness, that was wonderful. Oh, that was a pain in the neck, but it was wonderful.
I mean, that was one great thing about working with Fahrenheit. You know, there was no drama in that band.
Yeah, all those are great.
The Stompers, on the other hand, well, we had a lot of drama. But Charlie was such a pleasure, and David and Muzz, it was just amazing, you know, to see three guys who just worked and meshed together, you know.
Yeah, it's aside from that, and I think at some point we all grew up a little.
Very well put. Very good point.
That's a good point. Yeah, we're
while all still, you know, while still trying to be as
kids.
I want to say none of us are innocent, but there has to, when you're performing and kind of showing people who you are, there's an innocence about that sometimes that I don't want to say it's childlike, but I just want to say when you see people doing something you enjoy and they're really having fun, it brings everybody together. And I know I've been friends with all three of those guys forever. And, you know, as I say, Sal now too. Early on, Sal, the Stompers and the Fools played together an awful lot, but I want to say there was a lot of competition.
Yeah, that's the word. Oh, yeah. That's the word.
You know, and we would, there were nights we'd say, oh, damn, man, we played well, but Jesus, did you hear them? And other nights we were like, oh, geez, man, you know, that was so good. I love the Stompers, but man, we really hit it tonight, you know? But it was a lot of that competition now. And over the years, we had so much respect for each other, Sal and I in particular. And I think Sal feels the same way about Richie. But, yeah, so, I mean, I can pick up a conversation with Sal if I hadn't seen him for 18 months or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, so I think a lot of it is you're trying to trust your friends and your own skills or your own the things that you're trying to get across. You have to. There's a lot of trust involved.
And the other thing was, I mean, back then, you know, there were a lot of really good bands,
definitely.
But we were all fighting with each other. You know,
yeah.
I as a business person tried to stay out of the fray, but
yeah.
Even managers, I told you the story about Tim Collins when you guys played with the beat with Stompers at the BCN benefit. You know, I mean, it was just, there was so much competition that now that it's sort of quieted down and everybody realizes we all went through the same thing. You know, we all had the same problems. We all had the same blessings. We all messed up once in a while. And as adults, I think we can all look back and realize that we were lucky we had what we did.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it is respect now, too, I think. You know, and since we're talking about Sal, it should be said about what a dynamic guitar player he is. That's what. It's so perfectly in
that.
In Tom.
That got left aside in people's idea of what he and the band were all about, because he was such an emotional, jumping around, you know, that kind of thing. That his guitar playing always got left by the wayside when people talked about that band.
Yeah. Such an attack. It's just I, you know, even thinking about it, I you know, I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, man. No, and to see him flourishing with Tom, because I know they do some of the those rock and roll cruises that
right.
go place to place, and you know, I was real happy that Sal was getting out and around again, because we all need that, and you know, it's what we do. So, yeah.
That's the truth. It is what you do and stuff. Are you thinking of taking the big band anywhere? It's a big thing to do that, though, with a lot of entourage.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, how many cars we need, how big a truck we need, how many hotel rooms we need. It's hard to ask middle-aged and older men to share a hotel room together, you know?
Yeah, it's changed.
I think the furthest we'll get away is 2 or 3 hours from, let's say, North Shore, Boston, Southern Hampshire, 2-3 hours in any direction. You know, Worcester, it might be as far as we go in that direction. But, I wish, I'd love to play, New York City. I'd love to play, Washington, D.C. I'd love to play those places, but the logistics of getting that stuff moved around, it just isn't practical.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. You can get it, you know, you could ask all the money in the world, but when you look at it, it's going to cost you more just for the hotels and the transportation today. It's that expensive. Yeah. And the most people... Are you real?
I say people got to eat, too.
Oh, that's a biggie. That's why on these major group stuff, they have this massive catering put on by the promoter because the road crew's got to eat three meals a day, and the only way they can do it is have it there in the venue. And yep. And at the same time, the band comes in for their big meal, whether they have it before the show or after the show. It's still a huge expense and a huge undertaking to do for. If you ever go to any of the shows out, for instance, out at the old Comcast Center, it used to be called, or whatever it is, Great Woods, yeah. Great Woods. Yeah. The catering there is outrageous because everybody that comes through, because it's two or three shows, actually more than two or three shows a week, but is they continue the next day. They maybe have lobsters one day, they may have this, they may have, depending on what the riders say. But it's nice. Always big meals, and you could get really fed, and for 2 days you get fed on one of them things.
And at least that place is set up for that.
Yeah.
You know, when that place was designed,
oh, yeah.
I mean, when you eat there, you feel like you're in a restaurant.
Yeah, you know? It's far better than getting a deli tray at the Channel.
Exactly.
And they were good at that time because that's what there was left. If there was anything left, if you had Jack hadn't eaten them all. He was after the ham, you know. As soon as it came in, and in the late 80s, our daughter would put it all together for everybody. We'd put it in the freezer, and all of a sudden you'd go in there and there'd be like three big pieces of ham missing and this missing. Jack, where are you? Have you been eating this stuff again? Give me money first. Pay for it. It's out of your pocket now. But
there's a couple in New England right now. My two favorite venues in New England, I would have to say, would be the Tupelo and the Blue Ocean.
Oh,
Blue Ocean, oh, right.
Yeah. Wow.
Those places are really fan-friendly, good sight lines, great sound systems. And you know, when the Fools play there, that's one thing. You know, we get fed really well. But when the big band comes in with 20 band members and a couple of roadies, they feed us really well too. And I really respect them for that because, you know, most of the bands that come through between 4 and 8, maybe even 10 people, and we come in 2 or 3 times or twice the size of the biggest band they have there. And they still feed us so well. And it's just a lot of respect for those venues.
Wonderful.
We haven't done the North Shore Music Theater, which we're going to do April 5th, but I've heard really good things about that as well. So looking forward to that. That'll be the Fools. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's when Tony was running the South, the Cape Cod tent and stuff, they had whatever the riders, but they had a good catering too and good everything there. Tony would look after the English guys with all the English tea and this, that, and the other and whatever coming through. But
I saw Tony down there when the Fools played down there probably 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, he ran it at that point. He ran it for 28 years after he left the Channel and the one in Chatham, the pubs are there in Chatham. He had a pub out in Chatham that he was doing and stuff that the Wayside Inn. That was great for solo acts, even though he had Ziggy Marley out there and they were all hanging out in Chatham in that day and people were flipping out with all these rasters in the row in there. But that was Tony having fun and stuff.
Tony being Tony.
Tony being Tony and stuff. But
he's a great guy and I hadn't seen him for years, but tell him I said hi.
We will. I'm sure he'd really like to talk with you, especially on this podcast. But at some point we will get to talk with him and because he's going to have some interesting recollections. I know Peter's been having them for a long stuff that he's bringing up is like, wow, oh, God, Peter.
It's taxing my memory.
It's good because his new wife's loving it. She's hearing everything.
But she gets me out of the house on Wednesdays, you know?
Then when he went back, he told you that earlier, when he went back and talked to you about the big band. Well, can I go to the big band tomorrow? When's he on? I want to go see. I understand that one because Nancy would be the same on that one.
Well,
too.
The funny thing is, I mean, she she was a nurse, you know, raising a kid by herself, and she never really got out. So all of every time we go and see somebody, it's an adventure to her.
Is that,
and meeting people. I mean, you know. I mean,
but it's exciting to you, for you, Peter, because
I love it.
You go and she, you gain off on.
We sat down and chatted with Brian Wilson, and she was on another planet for a week. Yeah. You know, Carlos Pena brought us in the field when he was playing for Houston at Fenway Park. You know, mm-hmm. and David Ortiz kissed her hand. I mean, you know, I don't think she's washed it since. I mean, this was all new to her. You know, we've only been together for 10 years or so, and this was all stuff she could never experience in her own life.
And you were doing it every day.
Yeah. And she doesn't understand why sometimes it's just, I'm going to say it's just work, but it really isn't just work. But I kind of been there, done that, you know.
Yeah, and so it's just.
And I just have to sit there and be excited for her because it's new, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting because of her energy giving to you.
Saying,
saying this, that, and the other.
Absolutely, you know.
And it's like Nancy going to the folk stuff and seeing some of her friends and stuff, and that energy that she's giving me back. About what she did in the 60s with the folk stuff and whatever the people. It's really warm and really great stuff because certain artists I wanted to see a little English boy wanted to see this guy and that guy. I saw some of them, but some of them I never got a chance to see because they were always over here. They would never leave it, you know. They wouldn't go over and tour in England. Right. Although I did get to see the Soul Review with Otis Redding. That's Otis.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, in England and stuff and that kind of thing. And then I ended up on TV with a channel called Ready, Steady, Go, which was like the big pop thing there, midnight special over here and stuff like that. And you know, it's crazy stuff like Jello fights with Tom Jones in the commissary and stuff like that. And, you know, just fun stuff you do. And I didn't know nothing about it. I was a teenager, a young kid. And it was, but I just wanted to see these acts play, they perform, and they were so good at what they did.
You know, when I left the music business and sort of went into the straight educational end of the world. And I think I mentioned before that I would have to tell people the C and D versions of stories because if you told them the A and B versions, the real stuff, nobody would
believe
it. It just was impossible that could possibly happen to anybody, especially when I was walking around wearing a tie, you know. Just impossible.
That's a manager. I like it.
Well, I'll tell you a real funny story. I was working with Muddy Sam McClain, and we were at the old House of Blues. And for some reason, I got dressed up. So I'm upstairs in the dressing room, and the manager comes by, and he's talking to Sam. Nice to have you back, and all that crap. The old Howard Square House of Blues. And he's looking at me like, you know, who's this guy? And he goes, he looks at me again. He goes, "Aren't you Tim Collins's chauffeur?" I was like, "No, I represent Sam." I was like,
"Right."
I had to get on the phone and call Tim and go, "You're not going to believe who I was just mistaken for."
It's things.
Great place, man. Wasn't that the old House of Blues? I love that place.
Yeah, I loved it too.
That was fun. That was a fun place for entertainment.
Those, I want to say, copper. Busts of famous blues people on the ceiling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You'd look up.
Yeah.
There's Buddy Guy. There's Muddy Waters. You know, it just had such a great vibe. And what do you figure that place held? 200 people tops?
Yeah, tops. I think it was probably more like 150. But
you could, when you saw somebody in that place, man, it was magical. It's magical.
Yeah. And now you understand. The Mojo Club in Sheffield, where I grew up in the early, you know, 60s, 65, 66, 67.
Yeah.
I could touch Stevie Wonder off the stage because of the same kind of deal. You know how far that stage was in the House of Blues? It was like a foot up, and that was it. And that was the stage that in the Mojo Club. I could Tina Turner, I could grab hold of.
Wow.
It was so amazing to be able to, you know, Hendrix, all these people that came through the club, I could touch or whatever because it was that kind of close. And all the people lined up never went and put their hand there and never did that and this, that, and the other. They were just gawping, going, "Oh my God, how can you sing like that?" You know, that kind of thing. How's the show like with Ike and Tina Turner? What a show! You know what? This, that, and the other. It was so warm to be able to be in a personal place like that with that close.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And Stevie Wonder said the same thing. So he refused to leave. And what he did is he said, "I want to play there tomorrow." And this was like a Sunday, and we played Saturday. And he wasn't due to play another show till Monday somewhere, I think, in Newcastle. But he wanted to play. So what we did is we sent everybody, including myself, out to various clubs around the England, Manchester, Twisted Wheel, the Dungeon in Nottingham, and various other places you know, different cities in the middle of the night and going and say, "Stevie Wonder's playing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the Mojo, blah, blah, blah." You should have seen the line. Because, see, then days we didn't have the radio. We didn't have that kind of radio where we could do this, that, and the other. So, but we did this. It was phenomenal. And the shows were phenomenal because they put the heart and love into it. And that whole band just absolutely lit up the place. It was like, "Oh my God, I'm in another world. Give me soul. You know, it was just so well done. And being able to touch it. And that's why I understand when you're talking about the House of Blues and being that close and intimate with certain artists that come through. It really got you off on the feeling from the whole vibe. And that's what I mean by what people used to do at the Channel too. They'd come right up to the front of the stage and they weren't necessarily fans at that time, but they became fans after one number. You know, and you were looking at this and you're going, "Oh my goodness, I'm sure you saw all that change."
You know, you think about the Channel. Now, I'm going to see the Fools tonight.
Right.
So I get there early because I want to be right up front. I want Mike to sweat on me, right? So I got my girlfriend and I'm right in front of the stage. Well, am I going to sit through two other bands, fight to find a waitress to get a drink, you know, get pushed and shoved? And I got to do it for, what, three hours, you know, until the Fools come on. I mean, and nobody thought anything about it. You know, it was just the thing to do.
It was part of the voyage that evening.
Yes, it was.
Those voyages that evening. And remember, you were going on after midnight, so most of the other clubs in town were closed or closing, you know, early. And people would love it because you would be on there at 2 o'clock in the morning and stuff like that. And sometimes a little bit later because we just let it go because you're having so much fun, you know. But that's the key. Yeah. That was the key to what the club was, is that kind of feeling. And that's why I stayed there and brought in my system, because first time I ever went in there to see that local band State of Mind, I goes, "Oh, my goodness. This is phenomenal. This is like an arena here. You could play arena rock in here with no problem. Just the volume will kill you, but that's cool." Stuff. And then you see all the other bands are coming in, even on new music nights with the five and six bands at a time, just like a store, and you peel off the music.
I used to go to a lot of new music nights just hoping to find that one band.
You never knew, though, at that time. But that's the thing. But now you're using all those experiences, not just from the Fools, but all the leather tanning experience, all the stuff that you've done and all the stuff that you've wrote, and putting it with all this music that you love into with the big band with everyone. It's I'm in awe of that. I think I just love it. I just think it's just one of the best things for your career in more ways than one, because everybody's going to say, "Well, Mike's got a big band now." And I think it's a great story because it does real well. Anyway, I'm yakking, and if you've got one more story to go, we've got about 5 minutes or so, just in time-wise. We've got a better quality on this, as you can tell. It's crystal clear. Chris is doing a great job in there. I like it a lot, this particular new mixer. And I feel good on it. I can't wait to hear it on my stuff at home. And feel the voices. That's what we try to do, is also put the voices in this when you're telling a story, and you tell it, and then all of a sudden you go, make people feel good.
That's, I love hearing your stories, Dinky. I just love hearing the stories. I feel like when you tell them that I'm over there with you.
My stories where I wrote, but your stories. You see, that's the thing. It's not just, it's life that you did, and that's the big thing. And you remember those parts of life that, and sometimes you don't remember, and then they get jogged. I remember, like Andrew did. Andrew Arsenal was on earlier, and he jogged me about the Spinal Tap thing, which I wasn't there for, but then he was explaining about the whole roof fork, was draining on top of the stage, and those were the days of, are we become a rat place or what?
Mike, one thing I really have to say to you, man, and I admire you for one, well, I admire you for a lot of things, but you dare to take chances.
Yeah.
And a lot of people play it safe, and we all know a lot of people who have gotten to a certain point and just never wanted to grow anymore. I drove home the other day when we were talking to you, and just, it was the first thing that popped into my heart, my head when I got behind the wheel of the car, was just thinking about the stuff that you've done and do and not getting locked in a box.
Yep.
And it would have been easy to get locked in a fool's box. It was a great box. It is a great box. But the books, the big band, I mean, I'm telling you, man, I think it's amazing. And I really applaud you for it.
It's psycho chicken, qu'est-ce que c'est?
Well, thank you, Peter. I appreciate it. It's, I think for years during the fools, I was trying to make the guys in the band laugh.
Yeah.
A lot of this that came from me because I've known some of them. I've known Stacy since we were 5 years old. So,
wow. I didn't know that. Wow.
72 years right there. Wow. But I what makes him laugh. And so sometimes when I'm kind of over the years, kind of going out on a limb, I kind of know whether they're going to follow me or not. You know what I mean? Whether they're going to follow me or they're going to cut the limb off the tree.
But they all followed because they knew how entertaining it is in their spirit, you know. And we, let's join that spirit because it's entertaining. And that's the bottom line, really.
They're great guys, and as you know, when you were the band for. Sometimes it happens immediately, but when you were in a band for a long time, probably the reason you're still together is that you're family.
Exactly. No doubt about it.
Well, on that note, young man, we will end the podcast 2 of Mike Gerard and his famous stories from the Outback.
Peter, so much. We really enjoyed talking with you.
That's great. Well, I'm going to catch up with you one of these days, but I'm going to get out to see this big band one way or another.
Yeah, I would come in to sound check if, because I don't usually stay anymore to anything because of early morning dialysis stuff. So it's life, you know. It's just plodding on.
Hey, we're all still here, man. That's a blessing in and of itself.
Touch wood.
You know, I bought a lottery ticket. Rich and I sometimes buy a lottery ticket, and you know, he'll call me up the next day. We didn't win. Why the hell did we win the lottery? We already won the lottery.
There you go. We're
playing music in a band after all these years.
Well, I agree with
that. Part of what I was going to quickly say about working at Northeastern University was I listened to all of these people's life stories. They went to school there. They got a job. You know, they bought a house. They got married. And that's, I mean, to me, that's no life. You know, I lived my life on the terms I wanted to live it on. I mean, they did too, and don't get me wrong, but I didn't want to be bored to death my whole life, you know, and the music business certainly allowed me not to be bored ever.
Mm.
Me too.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a good one, Peter. That's a real good one. All right, on that note, I'm going to say Two Pints in a Corner, signing out on a Mike Gerard number two.
Love you guys.
See you, Michael. Good. See you.
See you, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
What a good guy, huh?
Another good one.